Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Midweek Metagame. I'm your host, Gabriel Nassif, joined by my two regular co-hosts again, Pat.
Hi, everybody.
And Canister.
Hello, hello.
Of course, our content will always be free, but if you want to support us, you can do so at patreon.com/midweekmetagame. You can support us for as little as $1 an ep, and you only get charged when we do uploads, since we're not always the most regular. We try to do every couple of weeks. And yeah, this week we're going to do previews for Pioneer and Modern, see which cards might have an impact on the format. And there's a lot, so we'll see where that leads us.
We certainly have a list of 20 cards here.
Exactly. So, I don't know, Pat, why don't you lead us off since...
Okay. All right. Okay. The pressure is on my shoulders. I'm going to start at the top of the list you sent me. Jace Reawakened. My notes next would say, I think this is very good, but we'll go and look up the exact rules text for it, because people may have been living under a rock and not seen this yet. So, let's find it. Where are you, Jace? Okay, anyway, Jace is a Planeswalker. It costs blue-blue, so that's off. We're off to a good start. It's two mana, and it has a... Jace, I'm pretty sure we can find this. And it has a, kind of a conditional casting criteria, where it says you can't cast this spell during your first, second, or third turn of the game. So you have two blue Planeswalker that you can only start playing from turn four. It comes into play with three loyalty and has three activated abilities. It has two plus one abilities. The first plus one ability is plus one, draw a card, then discard a card. Fine. Second plus one ability is you may exile a non-land card with mana value three or less from your hand. And if you do, it becomes plotted. And plotted is one of these one of the new keyword mechanics from the set, which essentially says you can exile a card from your hand face up, and that card's plotted. And you can cast it on another turn without paying its mana cost. So you set aside a card from your hand, you reveal it to your opponent, it's face up, and then you can cast it without paying its mana cost on some other turn, so just not the turn you plotted it. And so that's probably the most important talking point for this card. And then it has an ultimate ability, -6, until end of turn, whenever you cast a spell, copy it, and choose new copies, targets for the copy. So let's ignore the -6 ability, because I don't think that's really where this is coming in. This card is two mana Planeswalker, with 2+1 abilities that, you know, notionally you can't play until the fourth turn. But I think the most important thing is this second plus one ability, which lets you plot spells. And the most obvious kind of combination that people have kind of come up with is interaction with Valky. So you can plot Valky, has a mana value of three or less. You set it aside. And then on your subsequent turn, when you want to cast it, you have the option of casting Valky or Tybalt, the Planeswalker side. And so that's a pretty, you know, straightforward and obvious interaction that has proven to be powerful in the past, you know, cheating Valky into play, Tybalt into play. It's a good place to start. But, you know, there's other things that it interacts positively with. It does a good job of doing, you can set aside either Day's Undoing or Narset and cast one or the other, and then having mana up to interact and protect. And I think that's the... Hang on. Someone going to say something?
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh, very good. You were disagreeing. Yes. And that this idea of leaving mana up, as we may have alluded to in last episode when we discussed plot, is kind of the big selling point of the mechanic and the power. I think the power of this card is being able to cast your powerful spell, your finisher, your two card combo with protection mana up, is just, that's a surefire way to be more successful than if you were just tapping out two turns in a row to try and achieve something powerful like that. Anybody else got any kind of major thoughts on Jace? Is it the sort of card that, you know, is specifically thing to build around, or do you think it has general utility?
The way I would build around Jace is, yeah, as you said, just have Jace and nearly only instant speed interaction. Like, I guess it doesn't have to be instant speed, but like preferably just Jace and interaction, and just like try to capitalize on the fact that you can play it on turn only on turn four, like forward. But then you have two mana allotted to your Jace, and you spend the other two mana on interaction. And then the same thing happens, you like plot your Valky, and then you still are trying to keep up interaction on top of having Valky. So probably would be trying to have a lot of 2-mana counter magic removal spells, probably like, you know, a pioneer level strategy. But like getting to do powerful things while also not having to tap out ever, it's kind of attractive.
I like the fact that, you know, the fact that you can't play this on turn up until before turn four almost forces you to play like kind of sensibly with it. You don't want to just like, you know, just jam it and tap out. You're kind of forced to play a patient game with it. It kind of almost holds your hand through how you want to build the rest of your deck, which, you know, may or may not be a good thing. But yeah, I definitely think that that's exactly how I would go about building decks that look like this, and decks that contain Jace. Lots of instant speed interaction. And honestly, I'm really excited to play this card. I'm not going to invoke the word Inverter of Truths, but any blue-black combo deck is fine by me. Control deck is fine by me.
Yeah, I could see myself putting that card in any deck where it looks reasonable, you know, any deck that has a bunch of free mana spells, and then there's a build around part. You mentioned Valky. I've been playing a build of Living End that uses the Bloodbraid Marauder as a cascade spell. And, you know, you can't really, well, you can put in Jason with Charlotte's Agents, but that's kind of awkward to cascade into that. But in the Bloodbraid Marauder deck, it could be nice. It could be a good sideboard card.
Right, so you even think this might have some modern reach as well?
I would maybe try it in that build. Yeah, the one was the that goes as low. The one that relies on Bloodbraid, meaning you can foretell your suspend card. I believe that works. So that's another way to cast Living End. It pitches to Subtlety and Force. It loots, which is a nice bonus, and it's especially good at dodging Spell Pierce and Flusterstorm, which can be annoying cards if you play it on turn four, you know, and then you get to cast Living End with all your mana. Flusterstorm is only pay one more. Spell Pierce is easy to play around. They can't Flusterstorm the actual Jace because it's not an instant or sorcery, so could have some cool you know, use there. You never know.
I actually think we've almost come to an era of Magic where Planeswalkers are kind of like more kind of protected creature type, in the sense that like it's not like easily targeted. There was, you know, we probably went through a period of like 5 or 6 years where everyone had interaction for Planeswalkers, but now it feels like, you know, the power level's been turned down a little bit on Planeswalkers, and so they're hard to interact with again in some respects.
Kinda, but yeah. Like, more, you know, many of the removal spells printed nowadays also mention Planeswalker. I guess at least the ones at rare. So, like, you know, you have stuff like Get Lost in Pioneer or Bitter Triumph, just like kind of random removal spells that have Planeswalker stacked on.
If we talk about this card forever, we're going to be here all day. So yeah. We should quickly
mention Kellen Joins Up, which is a banned legendary enchantment, green, blue, white, that also says when it enters the battlefield, you may exile a non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. Mm-hmm. And it also says whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So this and Jace are the two cards that lets you cheat Valky into play, and that one does it a turn earlier. So it enables a turn for Valky, and maybe you can also get a little value out of the passive. So I figured we'd at least mention.
Oh, you know what other spell goes extremely well with Planeswalkers and also fits well with becoming plotted? Restore Balance. Maybe that's it then.
I'm a big fan, yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, that Jace has a bit of As Foretold vibes. Mm-hmm. Might be a better As Foretold. Not that As Foretold was ever really good, but yeah, we'll see. Anyways.
You get 12. Said, 12 As Foretolds, basically.
Perfect. Just what we always wanted. At least this one loots.
Yeah, well, we already had like Electro Dominance as well, so we already kind of had the one shot. The Jace one is kind of nice. It's like repetitive. Kellen is more of a one trick pony. All right, what do we have next?
I'm going straight off the list you sent me.
All right.
Who wants to discuss
Annie Flash the Veteran. This is maybe a little loose, but it is a much better Sun Titan, so I'm not sure who's going to want to play that. It is green. You can get it with Summoner's Pack, so maybe Canister. It brings back Teferi. It's 6 mana, Flash, 4/5, Naya, +3. And it says, when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, return target permanent card whose mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And whenever it becomes tapped, you exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play those cards this turn. So just a ton of value, maybe some top end in an Omnath deck, or I don't really know why I put that card. I feel like it does a lot, and I still, you know, people still cast Sun Titan in Modern, so.
Do they? When was the last time you played against one?
I was losing to that blue-white, you know, these blue-white Teferi.
Oh, the Emeria deck, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the Magic Online equivalent of being terminally online. Like, you just kind of created some problem in your head that you've encountered in leagues or something like that. With Sun Titan is a big player in Modern.
All right, let's move on. I figured it's a really sweet card. It's a ton of value.
I reckon that's the sort of card that like might be a standard power level, but I've written next to it. I don't get it, but like, obviously this is pretty cool. The Flash is weird though. Maybe we can give it a little bit of time. The Flash is very strange in being a kind of like Naya creature.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of the fact that she's called Annie Flash. So
yeah,
is that
would have been awkward honestly, otherwise? That could
possibly be true. All right.
Next we have a real card, maybe, probably not, but Geralf the Fleshrite. It's a 2/3 for blue and 2, and it says it's a legendary human warlock, 3 mana. Whenever you cast a spell during your turn, other than your first spell that turn, create a 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue token. Whenever a zombie enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each other zombie that entered the battlefield under your control this turn. So it's kind of a Monastery Mentor, except you only get tokens on your turn, and you have to have at least cast 2 spells. But the upside is the creatures are much bigger.
Yeah.
And I guess it's blue, so it's in the cantrip colors. I'm not sure that card's actually good enough to see play, but it is kind of a nice alt win con for maybe a deck like Phoenix that doesn't rely on the graveyard. You can also just play it on turn 4, play a cantrip, you get at least 1 token, and just really powerful. You know, people still try to build around Monastery Mentor, and this could be this could see play. I don't know, I'm not super convinced though.
Yeah, I think the biggest bummer about this card is the fact that it only triggers during your turn. Otherwise, it would go pretty well with like cheap interaction plus cantrips, you know, like hold up spell pierce plus consider this type of stuff, and then suddenly you get to make zombies on your opponent's turn. But being just sorcery speed, it's a little bit awkward. I'm kind of curious about this card. Maybe, you know, in standard there was a Monastery Mentor Hothygene deck with Helping Hand, which is basically a white mana unnerf that would let you cast a few cantrips like on the same turn, so that would be kind of powerful. And then I also was slightly interested in this card maybe in Vintage, like, you know, of course not
yeah,
where
it does trigger off any spell.
Yeah, it's seems to go reasonably well with Moxen, so, and sometimes people play weird threats in Vintage, you know, Malagorger Hydra showed up here and there, so like why Geralf the Fleshrite couldn't.
Yeah, I'm actually quite optimistic about this card. There's a couple of things that, you know, you've both touched on. I think that its comparison with Monastery Mentor is pretty obvious, and there's a huge advantage in not having to play white, because that was always the worst part of Monastery Mentor decks, in my opinion, is you had to put white cards in your deck, one white mana in your deck to cast it. And that was really kind of frustrating and somewhat limiting in some respect. And the other thing I always found strange about Mentor decks, or kind of, you know, complicated about Mentor decks, is the fact that you have to have essentially two turns. You have to have the turn where you make the things, and the turn where you make the things big. And this one, you get to have your cake and eat it too from that one turn. So you can set up to have this kind of turn where you go, you know, play Girolf, cast a couple of spells. You might cast a discard spell, you know, like a Thoughtseize, a cantrip, and a removal spell. And then suddenly you've got an army of a 2-2, a 3-3, a 4-4, and your Girolf as well. And so you basically get these kind of... It's almost kind of like, you know, kind of tap-out finisher sort of ball game, which has kind of, you know, some modality where you can just cast it on turn 3, hope to untap with it. I'm quite high on this card, I think. It's the sort of thing that I'd like to explore a lot. And, you know, I've also, you know, Gab pointed out this is a potentially interesting sideboard card for a deck like Phoenix, you know, which likes to pivot post-board if people are bringing in Graveyard Hate or whatnot. And this does a good job of that. I think I'd be surprised if this doesn't turn up at some point in time in a format like Pioneer.
That sounds fair to me.
Yeah, I'm lukewarm about it. I'm on the fence. I don't think I'll see a ton of play, but you never know. Want to take next canister?
All right, next card we listed out is Giza, the Hellraiser. So this time, Giza is a 5 mana, 3 black legendary creature, human warlock, with ward 2 and 2 life. So your opponent has to pay 2 mana and 2 life. Skeletons and zombies you control get +1/+1 and have menace. And whenever you commit a crime, create 2 tapped 2/2 blue and black zombie rogue creature tokens. This ability triggers only once each turn. So, it's a 4/4. Once again, you know, of course, modern, definitely not the place for a card like this, but Pioneer might be a bit rough, standard perhaps. I think the strength of this card will depend on how easy is it to commit a crime immediately as it enters the battlefield. Because if you do it, it's a pretty solid grave titan, like 5 mana, good ward, and then just floods the board pretty quickly. I think what you need to pair Giza with is just ways to target your opponent immediately with some kind of like abilities or whatnot. So
yeah, the best one's probably Graveyard Trespasser.
Oh, that's and nice. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, after sideboard you have Hearse. But yeah, I did that card because I feel like it's maybe good enough for standard, and standard and Pioneer are fairly close in power level, so
like it is a lot of power. 10 points of power if it just triggers on the turns she entered. And
yeah, I've written Grave Titan question mark next to it on my sheet, but I hadn't really kind of thought through the realistic number of ways that you could activate it on 5. So if you could put in the play and trigger it immediately on turn on curve rather than waiting until turn 6 to cast, you know, Duress or something like that. It's definitely significant upside if you can trigger it straight away. It's a lot of power.
The dream would be to trigger it both on your turn and then on your opponent's turn, and then
yeah, absolutely.
That's just an insane amount of power, and you know, I could see it showing up like in a singleton slot. It's kind of, you know, similar slot to the A-class odds you occasionally see in Pioneer. It doesn't have the lifelink aspect of the card, but it does have the grinding power, perhaps, if you're able to fit the quota of targeting your opponent.
All right, next card on our list. I have Tiny Bones, the Pickpocket, which I'm really going to have to go and read carefully because it has lots of words on it. That's what I know, despite being just a little guy. All right, Tiny Bones, the Pickpocket. 1 black, legendary creature, skeleton, rogue. It's a 1/1 with death touch. And it has triggered ability. When it deals combat damage to a player, you may cast target non-land permanent card from that player's graveyard, and mana of any type can be spent to cast that spell. So it kind of, it casts permanents from their graveyard in a kind of a la Direfully Daredevil. And I don't know, this has got, it's an interesting card and hard to evaluate. I think that, you know, a kind of a crude analysis would say, oh, this reminds me of Ragavan. I think that's complete nonsense, because Ragavan makes treasures, and that's the only thing Ragavan actually does that's particularly powerful, is accelerates your mana. But at the same time, this card, you know, it's a very low investment. It has potential to, you know, generate pretty reasonable card advantage. You know, it's never going to draw you more than one card a turn, but this, you know, it's a guaranteed spell, and you can build your deck in a way to make it so that your opponent's permanents go to the graveyard, whether it be from their hand or from, you know, or from play. And I mean, not that I think that Ragavan is a reasonable comparison at all. But unlike a card like Ragavan, it's actually fairly decent in the matchups where it's never going to get through. You know, as a 1/1 Death Toucher, if your opponent's putting creatures into play, at least it has some utility there as a defensive creature, which means that it's not the sort of thing where it's not entirely one dimensional. I think it's hard for me to, you know, go out and say that, you know, 1/1 Death Touches for one are constructed playable cards. But if they're good on, if they're card advantage spells in one, or card advantage threats in one matchup, and then reasonable defensive options in another, then, you know, maybe there's some credibility to putting it in your deck. This is a hard card to evaluate, in my opinion, but one that's had a lot of text for not very much mana.
Yeah.
Can anyone?
It has decent types, and it triggers crime, so.
It triggers crime.
Yeah, and if you don't play the spell, it still triggers a crime.
That is information that. See, these are the sort of things that I had, the subtleties that I hadn't thought through.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you play Giza and then you simply attack them with your tiny bones. Makes sense.
That's right. And Nissa pumps it as well. It's a skeleton.
Yeah, it gives it menace too. Wow.
Menace through. Death touch. Let's go.
It's almost like there's a combination.
Yeah. What I would be worried about with Tiny Bones is that it does not necessarily seem trivial for your opponent to have non-land permanents that you like have enough mana to cast early in the game, especially if you are using removal to get it through. Then like you won't have the mana to cast your opponent's blockers because you just spend mana to remove them. So it seems a little bit challenging on that end, or your opponent might just like not cast stuff, and then yeah. It could be a hit or miss, so not super excited about it, but interested in its in it, Tiny Bones being a somewhat playable 1-mana legend and Mox Amber, maybe. That sounds kind of cool to me.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Next, I have a card I skipped because I'm not a believer, but maybe one of you wants to argue for the card. It's Final Showdown. It's a white instant. It has Spree. So Spree is kind of the new kicker mechanism. So basically, you pay one white, and then you can add on three different modes. You can pay each mode once. One of the modes is one mana, all creatures loses all abilities until end of turn. Then choose a creature you control, it gains indestructible until end of turn. And then five mana, including two whites, destroy all creatures. So for six mana, it can be an instant speed Day of Judgment. For 7 mana, you can also make sure the creatures lose abilities, like Undying maybe. And then for 8 mana, you can save one of your creatures, because it checks in order. So first, all creatures are going to lose all abilities, then the creature you chose is going to gain indestructible. I think the base rate is like too expensive, but maybe you guys disagree.
It is pretty expensive, but in instant speed draft, it's always something at least interesting. That said, I don't really envision this outcompeting other drafts available in Pioneer too much.
I think if I was ever going to choose it for my deck, it would be because I was getting value off of the second mode, incidentally, in matchups where the Wrath wasn't good. So maybe you have one copy of this in your, you know, your mid-range white creature deck, and, you know, so half the time you're casting it to give something indestructible, or, you know, or maybe even Dress Downing, and, you know, some amount of the time you're completely ruining, you're swinging matchups in your favor by having a wrath that you can cast at instant speed to save your creature. But it's again, it's the sort of thing that I don't imagine showing up particularly often. But that's the context that I could see it being played in.
Yeah, there's the toolbox, the Micromancer toolbox. I don't know if there's other cards that tutor for cards that cost one or less.
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but I appreciate that you're going to constantly reference Micromancer with Spree. It's good. Yeah, Hill Giant.
All right.
Can I take something that's not on the list as well? That's actually on my screen right now that I think's worth discussing. It's Dust Animus. It's a 1W1C, 2/3 flying, and it has text. If you control 5 or more untapped lands, Dust Animus enters the battlefield with 2+1/+1 counters and a lifelink counter on it. So, if you have 5 untapped lands when it comes into play, it's a 4/5 lifelinker with flying, and it has plot 2, 1W1C. So, obviously, the front side of this card is not particularly thrilling. You're not casting a 2-mana 2/3 flying, and you know there are certainly the situations where you get 7 lands and tap 2 of them to cast this as a 4/5 flyer are not particularly appealing, but suspending this on turn 2 or plotting this on turn 2 and then having it on turn 5 as a 4/5 flying lifelink threat with your full with all your lands available does have some appeal to me. This is the sort of card that you envision seeing play, maybe not necessarily in, you know, not in Pioneer or Modern necessarily, but maybe even Standard. It seems like it has a lot of good things going for it.
I don't want to invest 2 mana on turn 2 for something that's only going to pay off, you know, 4 turns later if I've made my land drops.
Yeah.
I almost feel like maybe more of a control card where it's like a cheap blocker and then, you know, you kind of plot it, you sweep the board, and then you play it for free after you've swept the board. I hadn't thought about it that way, but maybe
you certainly
that's
don't have to
the
play it on turn.
It.
You certainly don't have to plot it on turn 2 either. You could be plotting it in those turns where you might, you know, say, be casting a removal spell and then plot it, and then next turn you can untap and just cast it as a 4/5 flyer.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like maybe a sideboard card against aggro decks, but then you probably have better options anyways.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, we should press on with the list that we have in hand. We're up to Bristly Bill.
Yeah.
Who wants to take Bristly Bill?
All right, I'll go, I guess. 2/2 for a green and one, legendary creature, plant druid. It has landfall. Whenever land enters a battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. And for 5 mana, you double the number of +1/+1 counters on each creature you control. So it goes nuts with fetch land, even in standard. You know, you could maybe play it in these Nissa decks. It's a one-man kind of, you know, you can one-shot people or at least solo win a game. It's a great way to sink your mana into stuff. And I guess
maybe
the plant type for Insidious Roots.
Oh.
Could you guys see this being good in Modern? Is it good enough?
In scales? Perhaps? Like, well, I guess, what else, right? But
yeah, but you don't have 5 mana is a lot and you don't have fetch lands and scales. Yeah.
Yes. But also not an artifact, so I guess you have plenty of two drops that you're already not playing because you can't fit them, so I guess Bristly Bill is not gonna be getting there. But I could see Bristly Bill as a cyborg juke for the analyst decks in standard.
Yeah.
You know, your opponent boards in Rest in Peace, which is gonna be legal in standard now with this set. And you just play your Bristly Bill and you play your funny Capenna fetch lands and then your creature becomes a 4/4.
Yeah.
And then you like pump your analyst, it becomes a 3/5, you attack with your crew of powerful monsters and they die.
Yeah. Well, one card I skipped too, I basically went down the mythic spoiler list, is a card I skipped because I didn't realize that was a pretty cool combo. It's called Rush of Dread. And it's one of these free cards, and the mode that interests us is for 5 mana, you make them lose half their life. And if you combo that with the Vamp, the Aklatos, the 2/2 for 4, that says at the end of turn, I think they lose life as they lose as much life as they've lost. This turn is like a 2-card combo kill. It happened to me on stream during the streamers event. It was actually my last game of the stream, and I think it was Covered Go Blue who was playing that, and I was like, "Oh, I'm dead. What happened?" And yeah, so figured I'd mention that one too.
Yeah, well, you're using like 2 cards that are not necessarily the worst, and it is a 2-card combo that just wins.
Yeah, it's funny because that 2/4, it was in our initial vamp list in Pioneer, and I was like, that card's so bad, why is it in the deck? And now it might actually see play, so.
So what you're saying is that the Pioneer Vampire deck is also going to become a combo deck.
It could. It definitely could. All right, Cancer, what's next?
Next one on the list is Stingerback Terror. So, it's a 4-mana Scorpion Dragon, 2 red-red, Flying Trample. It gets -1/-1 for each card in your hand. It's a base 7/7, and it has Plot for 3 mana. Flying Trample, so...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No haste, so a pretty slow card. -1/-1 for each card in your hand, so it's, you know, I guess we are seeing this as a top end finisher in standard Monred, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. Like kind of a juke in a burn deck, you know, it's a different angle. It hits really hard, and maybe they have a bunch of cutdowns, or they've used their removal, or maybe even in, I don't know if in Modern there's any matchups where you would ever want that.
It's kind of imagine without haste, it's ever really the sort of thing you can turn to.
Or maybe I was being a little ambitious with the Terradon.
I said, but I really wish this has haste. You know, on my comments, because it's certainly a cool card.
Yeah.
I mean, well, if it had the floor of being able to deal 7 haste damage to your opponent, it would be pretty intense, but as is, it's a bit more tame, you know, like the plotting it, your opponent sees it, and you play it. And it's just like a French vanilla monster. A pretty large one if you're close to being hellbent, but that's about it. So why don't we move to the next card?
Alright, so the next card is something we discussed last week. 3 Steps Ahead. My notes say this is a Pioneer banger, so this is the blue spree card.
The Pioneer Cryptic Command, basically.
Exactly, yeah. So for those of you who weren't around last episode, 1 blue instant with spree. The options are +1 blue, 1 colorless, so making a 3-mana total counter target spell, or +3 colorless, create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, or +2 colorless, draw 2 cards, then discard a card. Lots of modality. The world's best cancel. For 5 mana, it's counter target spell, draw 2 cards, discard a card. That's up there in terms of, you know, late game kind of utility. That's of the power level that you could definitely get away with in Modern. And I think last week we highlighted the need for some of these blue white and blue black control decks in that format to have hard counters into the mid to late game. And this is a certain sort of thing that's got so much flexibility and utility that you can just slot it into your deck. It helps you hit your land drops in games where you need it to, and then it just provides, you know, obviously it's a hard counter in the late game. I'll be very surprised if this doesn't see play, definitely in Standard and almost certainly in Pioneer as well.
Yeah, and if
even
you can,
he's a Gear Hulk.
Yeah, if you can build your deck with like some random artifacts laying around, I don't know, maybe you can get some sorts of clues or something like that, then it just can be like a pretty great top deck, like, and you know,
yeah, kind drawn, of on the level of Sublime Epiphany or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of got negative synergy with Gear Hulk, though, with Torrential Gear Hulk, because you have to, when you, if you recast it, you'd have to pay a blue colorless to make it counter a spell or whatnot again.
Yeah, but it sets it up nicely, and it's good in combination with it after.
Yeah, I mean, these are minor complaints. I think this is a good card, and you know, one of the kind of surefire hits for the set.
Yeah. Next, I think I might skip actually Curvig the Punisher. I played it a tiny bit. Was it in standard? And it felt like kind of hard to enable.
I didn't see it either when I was reading as well.
Yeah, so I'll skip Curvig the Punisher, even though I had it on the list. People can look that one up. Magda the Hornmaster, saying maybe we can skip unless you guys...
Why? I don't know. I kind of think that card's pretty interesting.
All right, so 2/2 for red and one. Legendary creature, Dwarf Berserker. Whenever you commit a crime, create a tapped treasure token. The ability triggers only once each turn. And sack three treasures, create a 4/4 red scorpion dragon creature token with flying in haste. Activate only as a sorcery. So it is not a ton of treasures. We have other cards that make treasures. And in standard, there's... a way to commit to trigger it on turn two is was Tiny Bones joins up, the one black enchantment that makes people discard and that makes them mill and lose a life when a legendary creature comes into play. Have you thought of like cool ways to trigger it on turn two in Pioneer or Modern? You sounded excited about it, Pat.
No, I just thought it had a lot of text on it for a 2/2 that plays kind of pretty well, you know, when it's beating down and pretty well in mid-range. It's the sort of thing which... Was there anything else I particularly... There was another card in here that I thought was going to... That was potentially interesting for cookbook decks, but this has some, you know, potentially some kind of purpose there as well if you're trying to make... if you've got a deck that's doing a good job of making treasures. Pretty good combo with Treasure Map.
Yeah, it is... I guess it is good. Wait, cookbook makes foods, do not... treasure.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And it only triggers once a turn too, so you can't even go nuts with like burn spells or anymore. You know, you can't go like Lavadard, Flashback Lavadard, Bolt 2 and make a dragon right away, so...
Yeah, no, it's probably not good enough, but it's the sort of thing where it had a lot of text and it's not very much mana, and I really underestimated the last Mugder as well. You know, the 2/1 that makes treasure whenever it becomes tapped and then searches for an artifact.
Yeah.
I thought that card's like surprisingly good. And it's even like, you know, cube, like a good card in Vintage Cube, and I really, really underestimated it there. So I was just not wanting to sleep on the word Magda again.
All right, fair enough. All right, Kenneth, so you got next?
Yes. Smuggler's Surprise was a card we touched already a week ago. It's the green spree spell. A green instant spree, plus 2, mill 4 cards, and you may grab up to 2 creature and or lands from among them to your hand, plus 5 mana for green. You may put 2 creatures from your hand on the battlefield, and plus 1 colorless creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain hexproof and indestructible. So yeah, once again, as I said, I will be trying this in Amulet at least a little bit without having too much... expectations about the card. So next in line is Slickshot Shoal, a card with assuredly probably the biggest impact from what we have discussed so far. We have touched about it a week ago already too, but honestly Slickshot is like probably in the top 3 or something of like the power level of the cards in the set for me.
Yeah, I agree. That card was pretty impressive in the streamers event when I played a tiny bit with it, a tiny bit against it, and it did seem like the real deal. I don't know how good it is, but it was I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, it's the one red creature bird wizard flying haste. Gets +2/+0 when you cast a non-creature spell and has plot for 1 in a red. So
I'd be surprised if this doesn't make some impact in Pioneer and Modern. I think just it combos pretty well with anyone trying to cast any burn spells. Or yeah. Even cantrips as well.
Yeah, it's so much damage, the investment's not that high. We talked about plot being able to play around removal and counters on a key turn, you know, to make disappear turn, to go for the throw turn in standard, but
yeah, it's got enough kind of this utility to, it's got enough play to it that it's not so, it doesn't seem quite as one-dimensional as many of these other prowess style threats.
I actually want to try this card in Heroic now. I don't think I have thought of that specific deck with it yet, but it just seems pretty great to have when you have God's Willing and Lorand's Escape in your deck, so you can actually protect it very easily and then just benefit so hard from the ability. Also, anything that triggers without getting specifically targeted is very nice and Heroic when you get slightly flooded with creatures and you just want to get more bang for your buck for your with your spells. So definitely interested in that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of cards we're maybe not going to mention. Like, I did have Aven Interrupter on my list. I think the card's fine. It's like kind of the new spell caller. Tiny Bones joins up, but in, for the sake of trying to keep this at a reasonable length, we're probably going to skip some cards, and we're probably going to miss a few.
Yeah, I think by the time we come around and do another episode, we'll have seen the initial impact as well. So if we overlooked anything, there's plenty of chance to go back and revisit and discuss.
Yeah. So next we have we have to mention these cards, I guess, when they print them. High Noon, a white and one enchantment. Each player can cast more than one spell each turn. And
cheap one.
Yeah, for red and four, you can sack it to do 5 damage to any target. So classic anti-combo card, anti-cascade cards. Do you guys think this one's better or worse than what we have, than a Roiling Vortex or whatever else people play usually? The Eidolon, sometimes he's playing in Fire decks in Pioneer.
Yeah, people often play Archon of Emeria or Eidolon of Rhetoric. Often it is because they are specifically interested in the creature typing of those effects, because you can find it with whatever way you get to grab creatures, Enigmatic Incarnation or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Not the case for High Noon, but I think decks that will take advantage of the fact that it shoots 5 to your opponent's face to finish the game a turn earlier, perhaps, will perhaps be interested in that. So I could see it being sideboarded in Convoke or whatnot.
It does play well with Fires of Invention too. You have that free mana, so it's a little less bad in the main deck in a matchup where the passive's not very good.
You're even thinking about putting this in the main? Wow, okay.
I mean,
I just read this as a 2-mana Rule of Law. That's all I could really see from this.
Yeah, like, that's what it is. Like, and also, we can say that it plays well with Fires of Invention, but then also, it's a card that says that you can play one spell per turn, which is, like, specifically what Fires tries not to do. So, it's kind of awkward.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're in the market for a Rule of Law, this is cheaper. that's about as much as I get to say about this card.
All right, next. Let's talk about Forsaken Miner. For black, we get a Skeleton Rogue, which cannot block. It's a 2-2. And whenever you commit a crime, you may pay black. If you do, return Forsaken Miner from your graveyard to the battlefield. So, you know, perhaps you can combine it with Goblin Bombardment or something like that.
That's all I was thinking.
Target your opponent.
Deal one.
There's a few combos. I played a skeleton tribal deck in the pre-release event in Standard, and I didn't check to see if there was good skeletons in Pioneer. I'm guessing these tribal decks are not good enough for Modern, but maybe Pioneer leveled. The Crusade, you know, it's called Corpse of the Lost or something. It's a black and 2, gives you a 2-2 skeleton, and it gives +1/+0 haste to all your skeletons. So it's an anthem, and you get a token, and if you've descended, you can pay a life and bounce it to your hand and replay it. So it's even a late game engine. Just tons of value, hits really hard, and I guess it'd be interesting to, I didn't do my homework, but to check.
I'm definitely interested in anthems that give haste. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and a body to go with it, so.
Yeah, wow, okay.
Yeah, that card combos was... Maybe Devil too, like Devil commits a crime every time you ping, so...
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's good enough to find a...
I, 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 I have a problem with these cards where I look at it and I'm like, well, is this really better than, like, you know, the next best option or the second next best option? Because we have so many cards that look like this that are just, you know, recursive one mana threat, one mana black creatures that yeah, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not, and I have a hard time thinking this is actually going to make impact. But you know, the idea of being able to use this as kind of an engine more than a kind of a recursive creature that's interested in attack and blocking is something I hadn't really quite considered. So yeah,
you can't block potential. With it, so it has to be, you know, fine. A part of that.
Okay, fine. Yeah, attacking your combo pieces. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, another card that could see play that combos with Devil in SAG decks is Pitiless Carnage.
Yeah, that was on my list of things to talk about too.
Yeah, it's 4 mana, sorcery, sack any numbers of permanents you control, even lands, then draw that many cards. And it has plot black 1, so you can plot it for free and cast it anytime you feel like. You know, you can even set up where you go, plot it, cast Devil, sack this, and I guess I don't know how rules work, because I was going to say they can't interact, they can't kill your Devil, but that's just not true.
Yeah, they can definitely do that. It goes in the stack.
Yeah, often the case of sacrificing, but not this time.
So I actually think this card's quite interesting. The thing that jumped to mind most of all was Underworld Cookbook, actually, and Assembly Worker was the card that got me most excited. So these kind of, you know, gameplay pieces decks where you just put a whole bunch of tokens into play. Quite often, whenever I've played against those decks in Modern, they look scary, and then they kind of get to this point where they don't actually have very many things that convert this huge number of resources into genuine positional advantage. But this one does. It kind of acts like Paradoxical Outcome, and it could probably, you know, set up to almost basically end the game in one turn once you plot this and then play Assembly Worker, and make a bunch of tokens, put this on the stack, draw a bunch of cards, and just, you know, create kind of an insurmountable positional advantage. So I think this card's at the very minimum worth trying and potentially quite powerful.
Yeah, basically the second two card combo we have found in the set already.
Yeah.
Next in line.
This is not a two card combo, this is a 1,000 card combo.
Yeah, well, I meant more so with Mayhem Devil, which is also not really a two-card combo. It takes a bit more resources. But next in line is going to be Insatiable Avarice, which is the black spree spell for black. We get black spree. Plus 2 mana, colorless, search your library for a card, then shuffle and put that card on top of your deck. And for 2 extra black mana, black, target player draws 3 cards and loses 3 life. So basically for 3 black we get a Painful Truths, which can target any player, which is relevant because many of the decks that will play this would play Shield Red too, and it becomes a 9 damage burn spell. And we get to pay 2 extra mana to make our draw spell into basically tutor up a card and draw 2 cards. Black draw 3, I think, could be a niche sideboard card for black midrange in some formats. But I was kind of longing for this effect in Modern Scam, which I've been playing a little bit lately, so I'll try it. We'll see if I'll be happy with it. Perhaps not, but...
Yeah. After playing, like, 2 games of Standard with it, I think I'm kind of off it. I think the strain it puts on your mana, you're basically giving up, you know, Field of Runes or Factories or whatnot, you know, all these colorless value lands to be able to cast that card on turn 3. And I'm just not sure it's worth it. It's really cool. Shield Red, 9 damage, but I think I'm off it. I could be wrong. I think it's just, yeah, too big of a constraint on the mana, and too bad of a top deck when you're playing a control deck. You're low on life. Free life is a ton, you know. So I'm on the fence, I think. I think that card's fine, not gonna be that great, but you never know. Well, if Pat's got nothing.
I've got no thoughts that I didn't say last week on draw three, lose three.
Alright, fair. Alright, I kind of got lost on my list. One card that was not on my list that we should probably mention is Nathan's cards. The World Champs card, Duelist of Mind.
Yeah.
It's a,
I forgot that was in the set.
Yeah, it's a star free for blue and one flying vigilance. Its power is equal to the number of cards you've drawn this turn. And whenever you commit a crime, you may draw a card. If you do discard a card, this ability triggers only once each turn. Nathan Sawyer, world champion, 28, I guess, the 28th world champion. So, you know, it's going to be a one free vigilance after your draw step. And if you cast a bunch of considers or throw a bunch of burn spells at them, you get to loot, grow its power, it has vigilance, so it can block a tiny bit. I will say I built a blue-red prowess deck in standard, and it was the first card I cut because I just didn't have ways to commit crime, and I just felt like it was worse than Shredder or the two-man enchantment that pumps your creatures, you know, draws your card, the memory card, prof's memory. So it does need, it's not like, oh, you know, any deck, I think you do need to be able to trigger crime pretty consistently for that card to be good. And, you know, Lavadart comes to mind, but there's only so many two mana cards you can play in these pros decks. I saw someone mention that in maybe the blue-black version of Phoenix, it's nice because you have Thoughtseize and maybe you target your opponent a bit more, but even then, I'm not sure it's good enough. So I'm a little lukewarm, I guess, was Rafine. It's nice and standard because Rafine draws you cards, so it pumps, it hits pretty hard. But I guess I'd rather play Denik on turn two, I think, to combo with Rafine if I'm not going to be triggering crime. Yeah, I'm not sure this card's going to end up having a real home.
No, I agree with you. When I got spoiled and then when I found out what committing a crime meant, I just think it's too many hoops to jump through for what is essentially a creature that attacks and blocks.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work for a Ledger Shedder, and for the most part, you seem to be able to play Ledger Shedder instead, which requires little work for like a Ledger Shedder that's possibly better than this one. So, not really interested in Nathan's card too much.
Yeah, apologies, Nathan.
All right, what's next?
Yeah, we definitely got lost on this list.
Well, let's mention Bonipal, Clearcutter.
Yes, hell yeah. I was hoping we get to Bonipal.
So Bonipal is a 6-mana simic creature, 3 green, blue-blue, giant scout legendary. She has reach. When ETBs, she creates a ball, legendary blue ox creature token with this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. It's a 6/5 by itself, so basically for 6 mana you get 2/6 power creatures at least, and whenever you attack, so not whenever this creature attacks, whenever you attack with literally anything, you draw a card and then you may put a land from your hand or graveyard onto the battlefield.
Once again, this card.
I kind of love this card too.
Yeah, it's.
I don't think it's great in Pioneer or Standard or Modern, but I kind of love this card.
It's a really big Titan, like two giant creatures, and maybe you draw a card immediately if you have an opportunity to attack with something. Like you draw, you ramp, perhaps you get a land from your graveyard that's just +2 cards that grows your Ox token too. Seems like a potential sideboard juke once again for the standard analyst decks, perhaps. It's just, you know, a really big card and really big impact.
We have the blue Fable of the Mirrorbreaker, and now we have the blue green Grave Titan.
Oh, yeah,
I think that card's just so much value. It's got to be decent. I think it's gonna see play.
Yeah,
so
like
As long as you will be interested
in playing a 6-mana card, which is of course not always the case, this is probably as good as it gets in those situations. So yeah, I not necessarily going to see play, but if it does, like, it will.
Yeah, it'll be very cool if it sees play. I've written in my notes and this. I don't necessarily see it having some obvious home, but one kind of as a general comment about things in this set. There's a lot of just really interesting things that are at the top of your curve. So there's Bonnie Powell. We talked about Annie Flash. There's Gissa as well. So the Grave Titan. There's Rakdos the Muscle, which we haven't spoken about, but we could if we wanted to. But there's a whole bunch of creatures that, like, 5 or 6 mana that have enough going for them that I can see them having an impact in multiple formats, even though they don't intuitively look like they should. And I just think that's really cool. There's a bunch of creatures in the set that I would love to cast, and that's really interesting to me. I think I'm really exciting. So Bonnie Powell is definitely at the top of that list of really cool things. And yeah, there's lots of value, as everyone else has said, that, you know, this could definitely make an impact.
Yeah, I feel like all these cards would have been great, not even like, you know, 20 years ago, honestly, but just like
maybe 20 years ago,
three or 4 years ago. Like, two others you didn't mention are Roxane, the 4/3/4 green, red, and 3/5 mana. There's Bruise, the 4/3/4 white, red, and 2 that gets you some card advantage or some tokens. Just so many, like, great top of curve cards that might never see play, but might be good enough.
Anyway, I definitely think Bonnie Powell is cool, and I would appreciate anybody trying to find a home for it.
Yeah, and I like Beau too. Beau means pretty in French. It's like the masculine word for pretty. When you say a guy is Beau, it means he's good looking.
Right. Okay. So,
that made me giggle too. All right, what do we have next on our hectic list, Canister? What do you see that you like?
Let's move on to a card that's less cool, but seems very powerful to me. It's Pest Control. For white-black, we get a sorcery, which destroys all non-land permanents with mana value 1 or less for just mere 2 mana. And it also has cycling for 2 colorless.
Yeah.
This just seems really strong for me for like a 2 mana card. A really strong sweeper if the situation calls for it. And 2 situations come to mind already for me. First, in standard, this seems quite strong against the Convoke deck. It sweeps a lot of their things for just so little mana. And then in modern, the Goraios Vengeance Esper deck oftentimes seems to struggle against the card Urza's Saga, in my experience. In the Amulet matchup, this frequently comes up, and making the constructs and then fetching some graveyard hate pieces and then just holding up those permanents seems like a strong way to combat that deck, and Pest Control is just an insane counter to that, and it has the low opportunity cost of being cyclable, and then it's also the good colors for both Solitude and Grief. Plenty to like about this card, or to be scared of the card, I guess.
Yeah, people complain a lot about cards like Lockdown, Sunfall, and feels like they printed another one of these cards. I don't know how I feel about it. I think I don't like that they gave it cycling on top of everything. Just, you can throw it in your main deck almost, and and you're, you know, if you're playing control, or yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that card. We'll see. Maybe it won't be the end of the world for the super aggro decks. Maybe one or less is a little too narrow, even though it does line up well against Convoke specifically.
Yeah, I suspect that it's just narrow enough that it's not the sort of, it's the sort of thing where you probably have to tack a little bit of something onto it to make it, you know, a definite impact card. If it was just one white, one black, do the effect, it would be a pretty narrow and sideboard card, kind of like, almost remind me of like your Rakdos. So what's the name? Hidetsugu Destroys All or something like that, whatever the black one black.
Consumes all.
Consumes all, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you just, as weird as it is to say, because it reads so powerful and so cheap and so low opportunity cost that it feels like it almost... I think we said a couple of years ago, we said this about Ragavan, where you kind of... You look at the dash and you're like, why do you even need that? But it's actually quite important part of making the card playable and good. And I feel like the cycling's actually necessary to make this the sort of card that has impact, and they wanted it to have impact, but it just feels really swingy, I think. I think there'll be enough situations where it's not quite great that you'll kind of understand why it costs 2 mana and cycles. But yeah, great card. And probably the most likely card in the set to just have just cross-the-board utility and impact, and it's the surest fire bet in the set, I think.
Uh-huh.
What about, Canister, you said this card was pretty exciting. We forgot to mention it last week. Satoru the Infiltrator.
Yeah, Satoru.
I'm going to go get the text. Satoru.
Satoru seems like one of the, like, if I had to assign the best card in the set, I think I would guess that it's just this one. So for blue and black, it's a legendary creature, human ninja rogue. Interesting typing here. We get menace, 2 power, 3 toughness. And whenever Satoru the Infiltrator and/or one or more other non-token creatures enter the battlefield under your control, if none of them were cast or no mana was spent to cast them, draw a card. No, only triggers once per turn right there on this one, so you get to go nuts and go wild, and only imagination stops you, because...
Where does your imagination lead you at the moment?
Like, I was talking with my chat the other day about Satoru a little bit, and it's just, like, endless. It seems to trigger on every other card in existence in Magic the Gathering. Like, you can cast Reanimate on Satoru and draw a card. You can Evoke Grief and draw a card. You can cast an Ornithopter and draw a card. You can reanimate Bloodgust. You can return Cauldron Familiar. You can do plenty of other stuff, and it's just going to keep let you drawing cards. And, you know, for 2 mana, double colored cards, honestly, oftentimes an upside in Modern nowadays, for being able to be pitched to multiple Evoke Elementals, and then, you know, being a 2 mana 2/3, not exactly the best, because that is well within the range of getting Lightning Bolted, destroyed by any removal spell, but the upside is pretty high, and if it just stays in the battlefield, you get to just draw so much.
Yeah, I go one Court of Calling, and then Undying.
Yeah. That's nice too.
Okay, I'm gonna be the counter to that card, and I'm gonna say that the problem with that card is that which deck is gonna have enough of that effect to make it worth it? And if you do build your deck around it, it's a pretty unique effect, and meaning if you don't draw Satoru, the rest of your deck might be underwhelming. You know, I think it's going to suffer from that problem. Do you see, like, you've mentioned all these scenarios, but do you have a specific deck in mind where it's a slam dunk include?
Well, I could perhaps see Satoru in the sideboard of the Esper Goraio deck, where it's kind of your juke postboard when removal, like, people would like to cut creature removal against you, and then you bring Satoru in and you have Ephemerate to protect it. Ephemerate draws a card with Satoru. You have the pitch elementals, which draw a card when you pitch them, and then you also draw an extra card once you actually get to reanimate your Grizzlebrand with Goraio's Vengeance, which surely will tip the scales.
So you're saying it's up the beanstalk,
basically.
Okay.
It's like, you know,
it is kind of, maybe has the potential to be the most broken in Eternals formats, I guess. It might be. Yeah.
It's the sort of card that's, like, most likely to be banned in the set.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Most likely to be, not necessarily most likely to hit, but most likely to be banned if it does hit.
Yeah. All right.
Interacts really well with cards like interacts with well with Unearth, interacts well with plot. There's just a lot of things going on there. There's too many possibilities to narrow it down to something that definitively say that it's going to work in this context, I think. It just has a lot of potential.
In standard, you can play Satoru on turn 2 and follow it up with Cryptic Code, which is like a decent enough threat card, which happens to meet the condition, and it draws your card.
Wow, that's really great. Wow, just manifesting from the top of the deck, yeah. Right. Or disguising or whatever. That triggers it. Shit. That's great. Is the white Unearth, does it return a permanent? Or does it just return a creature?
Like helping hand? I think it's creature. Yeah.
Just creature?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, alright. That's a shame. Lots of other things that could happen there if it was just any non-land permanent. Yeah. Anyway, Satoru. Interesting card. Anything else that we want to discuss at length? I've got one last one that I would like to mention.
Yeah, go ahead. I have one or two left as well.
Okay, the last one that really, really jumped out at me is Hostile Investigator, which I'm going to look up the exact text for so I don't say something precise. Of course, it's not in the set OTJ. It's the big score.
The big score, yeah.
Yeah, here it is, which I learned today is actually just in the regular booster packs, but it just has a different set symbol, which drives me up the wall. Anyway, that's a story for another time. Okay, Hostile Investigator, 1 black, 3 colorless, Ogre Rogue Detective. It's a creature. It's a 4/3, and when it enters the battlefield, target opponent discards a card. And whenever one or more players discards a card, investigate. This ability triggers only once each turn. This card is a walking 3/1, and I love it. There's everything about this card I adore. I just want to put it into play and have my opponent discard a card and then make a clue and then crack it to draw a card later on while I have a 4/3 in play. Just a lot of value on one card. No questions asked.
Yeah, I could fit a lot of mid-range decks. Could fit in Waste Knot too.
Absolutely.
You know, the gain life on Shield Right is really nice, but that one fits your plan better.
I will note that it doesn't give you a clue if they don't have any cards in hand, but if they don't have any cards in hand, so be it. I have a 4/3.
Yeah, actually, the first time I cast that card in the streamer's event, my opponent, my draw was too good. I went duress into bat, into duress bat, into investigator, but then no cards left in hand.
My condolences.
You've become a victim of your own success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like this card. I would be. It's great. I just can't imagine putting it in.
Magic's gotten to a point where somehow it's not gonna be good enough, but it's gotta be, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like there's zero. It's a 3/1 on the floor. That's just unbelievable. And you can make more clues out of it if you really want to. It kind of reminds me of Tireless Tracker in some respects. It's just.
Yeah.
It's not. What a card.
It also
probably unplayable.
Trigger a severe discard card, right? So,
right, you as well. Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that. That's great.
Still, only once per turn, even if it's both you and your opponent discarding. So,
yeah.
No, good
synergy with Liliana.
Yeah.
I love the synergy with Liliana just being out of bank cards as well. Like you can like have your clues in play uncracked, and like you can keep activating when you have Liliana with zero cards in hand, and then activate, then draw. That's really nice.
Yeah, I kind of already despised that Waste Knot deck. I hope that card doesn't make it better. It's really not fun to play against.
All right, anything else?
There's a few. I had Annie Joins Up, which is the Naya legendary enchantment for 4 mana. When it enters the battlefield, you deal 5 damage to target creature or planeswalker and opponent controls, and then if a triggered ability of a legendary creature you control triggers, it could trigger an additional time. I think it might have a few applications, but I was thinking just in Fires, you know, it's a nice 4-drop to go with your Fires. It doubles your Karuga trigger, your Yorion trigger, maybe your Tulsimir trigger. I guess... The king, right? if you get to ever activate ability, that also doubles the trigger, but it's just, you know, a decent blink target, 5 damage, kills a shield red, kills a lot of things, kills a Teferi, kills, I mean, what people, it kills a Vayneripper, I guess, if you have a creature to sack, so.
Solid.
Kind of a cool card. And then last one, as a living end player, I have to mention the Harvester of Misery, which is a spirit, 5/4 for black 3 for 5 mana. It has menace. When it enters a battlefield, other creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. And for black and 1, you can discard it from your hand, and target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. So could fit into Living End. It does kill Voidwalker, which is one of the deck's biggest problem. Unfortunately, the card does get exiled by Voidwalker. It kills a Ragavan, it kills a Chandler. It, you know, can be part of your fair plan of hard casting subtleties and grief and endurance, and now you have this one as well. It does not kill Magistrate, but I don't expect Magistrate to see a ton of play. I keep thinking, you know, okay, Living End's gone, Rhino's not very good, so I'm gonna dodge all the hate you used to. But the other day I got paired against Tron, and they still had Warping Whale in their deck, so I was kind of salty about that. I was like, what the hell? Is that, you know, someone who thinks Warping Whale is still a fine card, or is that just kind of lag and they haven't adjusted their deck list? And today I also got Chalice. I think it was mono black card, and then maybe they just had the one chest in their sideboard and decided to side it in. So, yeah.
But, life's rough for combo players.
Yeah, that card seems, you know, pretty solid. Kills something when it comes back, and it kills more stuff. Pitches to grief. So could see play. I'll probably try it out and see how it feels. Doesn't seem like, oh my god, solve this, a bunch of Living End's problem, but it might just be good enough.
So I guess the best way to use this to deal with Voidwalker would be to get it into your graveyard before Voidwalker even is into play. And it is nice that it solves any amount of Voidwalkers your opponent can present, so kind of lets you plan forward
it's
a little bit.
It's just castable.
It's castable, and it does, like, doesn't work if they have the scam spell up. That was my favorite part about the Bloodbraid deck, is the 2 mana cards you got to play, especially Legion's End. That might help a bit. But yeah, I think that's it. I'm sure we've missed a few.
Oh, I have one last card.
Oh,
to
you have one last? Okay, let's go.
Yeah, it is Simulacrum Synthesizer. For 2 and a blue, so 3 mana total. It's an artifact from the Big Score set. When ETBs, you scry 2. And whenever another artifact with mana value 3 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, create a construct token. So it's like 0/0 gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. And how do we get artifacts with mana value 3 or greater? Well, perhaps by casting affinity spells or extra copies of the synthesizer. So, you know, following this up with a Frogmite does sound decently powerful to me. And then if your deck is just Mid Enforcers and Thought Monitors, that's not too bad either.
All right, so we'll engine for Mono Blue Affinity and Modern.
You guys don't seem excited at all.
I was trying to think about it. I thought you were going to mention the blue hit. What's it called? 3 Steps Ahead. That card copies an artifact.
Ooh.
For 4 mana, so you can curb that card into copying it, getting a token.
Yeah,
extra copies of it.
That doesn't really sound
like. Then you really pop off.
Like, it would make too much sense, but let's say we're gonna follow up the synthesizer with the One Ring. That probably also doesn't really make much sense as a cohesive deck, but it is an expensive artifact that triggers it. And then
we're definitely
it lets you
the names of cards now.
It is a lot of value. It has Scry, so it lets you make your land drop, find your next piece of a combo, and And once it goes off, it is just one card engine, kind of one card kill.
Yeah, the problem would be that this kind of a deck is, you know, a bit one-dimensional, and you know, if your opponent happens not to be too impressed with the construct tokens, which some of them will not be, then your plan might fall a bit flat. But yeah, I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it, but I'm willing, you know, to be proven wrong for sure. Cool card, I like it. Oh, what about Archway? We didn't talk Titan player. Arid Archway, is that something you're interested in for some reason? Is that better than anything that already exists?
Well, once MH...
Plants Surveil 1. Oh, nice. If in Desert was returning Surveil.
Yeah, once MH3 releases, and in some, for some reason, the new Emrak will make it to my deck, then I will for sure appreciate a Corolla's Bounce Land. You know, then I'll just need... Triple amulet, play Arid Archway once, activate my cookbook, put Emrak into play. Easy peasy. For now, I will probably stick to the ones that produce green mana instead, but that seems preferable, and the upside seems pretty non-existent on this one.
Alright, fair enough. Alright, yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, we're going to start testing for the Pro Tour with the new cards, and then after the PT, get to, like, trial the new cards in Pioneer and Modern.
PT is standard, right?
PT is standard, yes.
Great, okay, cool.
So, I also qualified for Arena Qualifier this weekend, which is standard. The old standard was not the new cards yet, so. But, yeah, should we put our lives on the line?
With what format have we talked about? And I wouldn't. This is not a format. This is not a deck choice episode.
We have to talk about Modern and Pioneer was the new cards, and your deck has to at least have one new card in it. That's the rule.
All right.
So Life on the Line is theoretical tournament. If you win, you live. If you lose, you die. And we have to bring a deck, you know, of the formats we've talked about this week. So. I probably took you by surprise, but if one of you is ready, go. I haven't really thought about it. I'm going to go first, actually. I'm going to go Living End. The Bloodbraid Marauder version was the new chase to enable, you know, extra ways to Living End, as well as, you know, some copies of Harvester of Misery in Modern and in Pioneer. Pioneer, I'm gonna play just a Jace Valky deck. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the build's gonna be, but
that's exactly what else I would do. I was gonna do that in Pioneer and just play Jace Valky. I can't really think if I do anything particularly special. I think the idea of just having maximum amount of cheap interaction and then some, you know, dig through times, essentially, to just kind of follow it up sounds very appealing, and I would be very happy to play a deck of that style and hope it's good. And I think in the kind of open format like this, I think it would do quite well because it's just, you know, straight up powerful. And in Modern, I would play Esper Reanimator with Pest Control.
Wow, what a cop-out.
Look at me. I just look.
Was two Pest Control in my sideboard.
Exactly. You didn't set the stipulation up well enough. Also, I just think it's a complete farce to do Life on the Line right now.
All right. Well, I did build a Modern deck with two new cards for Hareria Wayfinder, which is the initiative where I build decks with new cards
professional
specifically.
Magic player
over here. And that was Satoru. Simulacrum Synthesizer Affinity. So, you know, you play your Satoru and then you play your Synthesizer Frogmite and you just go off and you draw your entire deck. I'm playing that.
Alright, we're stone dead to that.
While for no Pioneer, let me play Blue Red Creativity with Three Steps Ahead. Yeah, that's my choice.
Very good.
What kind of what are we putting into play with creativity?
Torrential Gearhulk, of course.
Micromancers.
Wait, which card?
I just want to put Torrential Gearhulk into play, and then
Gearhulk.
I accept that I do not get to flashback my spell. I just flashback Magma Opus every time anyway, so it's fine.
All right, well, there you have it. Your day, week one, Modern and Pioneer broken decks. If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. We hope you all have a great week. I think we'll probably see you after the Pro Tour. And yeah, thanks for making it this far. We love you.
Cheers. Bye.
Take care.